from Irwin to York, Warren to State College. This is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Supreme Court of the United States has ruled it unconstitutional for labor unions to force payment from public employees as a condition of employment. Americans for Fair Treatment is dedicated to helping workers protect those rights. David Taylor and Matt Briette are joined by Keith Williams of Americans for Fair Treatment for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And President Trump is threatening a government shutdown if he doesn't get funding for the border wall. I'll have a town hall commentary on why this is just the latest product of Congress's broken budgeting process. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, we have news headlines from patownhall.com. A mob whipped up by the ultra-left-wing group known as Antifa accosted a pair of high-profile conservative activists having breakfast at a Philadelphia restaurant this past week. Charlie Kirk and Candace Owens, who lead the conservative millennial organization Turning Point USA, were the latest victims of the mob mentality that has seen various Trump administration officials and conservative leaders harassed in public places. The protesters chanted against so-called white supremacy, which is interesting considering Owens is black. City police officers moved in and ended the confrontation without further violence. Meanwhile, at the other end of the state, the Democratic Socialists of America are slated to hold their first-ever Rust Belt Conference in Pittsburgh. Some two dozen chapters of the socialist movement within the Democratic Party are meeting in a city where two of their members staged stunning election victories against mainstream Democratic state representatives in last May's primary. While socialists have made great strides in Democratic primaries this year, including ousting a veteran congressman who has been vying for a top leadership post, their candidates did not fare well in this past week's primaries in the Midwest, where more mainstream Democrats prevailed. County fairs don't usually make the news, except to announce the winners of the biggest vegetable and best pie competitions, but Republican State Party Chairman Val DiGiorgio has asked the Fayette County District Attorney to investigate allegations of election law violations after Democrats offered Steeler tickets and a trip to the posh Nemacolin Woodlands Resort as inducement for people to register Democrat or to change their party affiliation from Republican to Democrat. State election law is clear such inducements are illegal. Democrats outnumber Republicans in Fayette County, but that edge has narrowed substantially in recent years. Read about all things Pennsylvania at the all-new patownhall.com. In a landmark ruling last June, the Supreme Court of the United States upheld worker freedom by ruling it unconstitutional for labor unions to require either dues or fees be paid to them as a condition of employment for public employees. But exercising that right is a different story. Americans for Fair Treatment is educating workers on their Janus rights, so named after the plaintiff in the suit, and will assist in fighting unions who do not respect those rights. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to host a Capitol Watch discussion on the issue. He is joined by regular panelists Matt Briette and by Keith Williams of Americans for Fair Treatment. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, my pal, Matt Briette, leader of the Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, thanks so much for being on the show.
Hey, good to be with you, David.
Well, we haven't had the chance to talk about the repercussions from the Janus decision that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that, in fact, public employees do have a right to not be coerced into paying for political views that they don't believe in. What is going to happen with that here in Pennsylvania?
Well, yes, this was a huge decision by the Supreme Court of the United States. Of course, something that we saw coming over 2 years ago that we thought was going to be overturned, but with the unfortunate passing of Justice Scalia. It ended up being a tie, 4-4 vote. But all things pointed to the ending of something that really only started in the 1970s when the unions won a major victory of being able to compel public employees to pay a union just to keep their job. And, you know, sometimes upwards of 80% of total union dues. Well, the Janus versus AFSCME case overturned that power of unions to force people and to violate public employees' First Amendment rights. And this is has a huge impact on states like Pennsylvania, where over, I think, 330,000 people are now no longer forced to pay a union just to keep their job. And so you can work in a public school or for state government and not have to join a union just to keep your job. So this is huge. Now, the question is, if they've been freed from this, you got to get the word out.
Correct.
You have to let people know
right.
how to exercise their First Amendment rights. So it doesn't just automatically mean 330,000 people go exercise their First Amendment rights. And they can also choose to still be in a union and pay, you know, 100% or 150% should they choose to remain in a union. But what this did is it just really restored that First Amendment right to not pay a union if you don't want to support their efforts.
Well, and so now that the Supreme Court has recognized these rights, of course, it's up to, you know, as you say, for individual citizens to vindicate those rights, to make those rights real. And to talk about that, I want to welcome our special guest to the program, Keith Williams. And Keith, you're the director, Pennsylvania Director of Outreach for Americans for Fair Treatment. How did you come to this role?
It's been a long and winding road, actually. Thanks for having me here. But yeah, I basically, the story, I guess, begins in 2013. I had been teaching at New Oxford High School in Adams County for, I guess it was about, would have been 13 years at that point, because I started in 2001 in that district. And the union, basically, they had a vote behind closed doors to go closed shop or to go agency shop, I guess is the official term.
Okay.
We had been an open shop district up until that point. Most districts in Pennsylvania are not open shop at this point. They basically allowed us up until 2013 to be employees and not pay into the union.
So you right. had both folks that said, hey, I want to be part of the union. They'd pay all the union dues. And then other teachers that said, no, I don't want to be part of the union. But you were not forced to pay the union just to keep your job. So you had both non-union and union members working in the school.
You
district.
Had voluntary unionism.
Correct.
Right. And if like Matt, to your point, if you didn't want to support the union and be a part of it, you didn't have to be. And that was fine. Everybody was okay with that. In 2013, the union negotiated with the school board. The budget was a little tight. There were 2 years left in the contract. The board went to the union and said, hey, can we renegotiate for the remaining 2 years of the contract? The union said, sure, we'll open up the contract, renegotiate the remaining 2 years. As part of that, they negotiated fair share into those remaining 2 years of the contract.
So-called fair share. And this
yes.
is one of these
right.
one of these tricks of language
yeah.
That's actually the compulsory union fee.
Exactly. Yeah. So they like to call it fair share. We obviously had issue with that. And when we received the email from the union president informing over 40 of us that we would be forced to pay $435 to a very political organization.
For the privilege of keeping your job.
Exactly. For the privilege of keeping your job. In fact, all of that money is taken. You don't even get to touch it. It's not like you're physically forced to write a check. Which is a separate issue. That's where we talk about paycheck protection.
Right.
They actually have the ability to simply deduct it straight from your paycheck before you even see the money go into the bank. So we got this email saying, hey, you owe us each $435. And the mistake in that email that she sent out, that the union president sent out, was that she did not blind copy everybody. She simply carbon copied us all.
Uh-huh.
So I hit reply all,
yep.
and thus began my career as a freedom fighter.
How about that? And so they
outed all of the non-members.
Yeah, exactly. Made it real easy for us.
So. Well, and I think for the sake of the listeners, this is a point to emphasize. Keith, you did not you didn't choose one day to say, I want to be a conservative activist. This fight came to you.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it's fair to say no one in our district, especially those of us who were forced to pay, knew that unions even had the capability of doing this. There was mutual respect among all the members of the faculty up until that point. And I think that was sort of the wake-up call for everybody and for myself especially to say, hey, you know, if they have this much power and influence as a politically motivated organization, something needs to change. Essentially, we, as I tell it, we unionized against the union in that moment. we used our grassroots organizing power and basically we got together. We met in a library classroom a couple days later and went through a very convoluted process to kind of map out what we needed to do to get out or to exercise a religious exemption, which is another convoluted process that they make you jump through. And then, of course, they get to dictate where the money goes as well. So they really make it difficult. They make it as confusing as they can to really work through any of that process and to exercise any rights that you can even find, because it's, again, their interest is not in telling you what your rights are. Their interest is in collecting money.
And so you organize and do something that I don't think has been done in Pennsylvania, where you reversed this action that went from an open shop to closed shop back to an open shop, that you right. guys were successful in reversing this effort of really denying you and your colleagues who did not want to be union members your First Amendment rights, something that we'll get to as it, you know, relates to Janus. Talk about how that, you know, what ended up happening there.
Right. So we organized, we pushed back, we made things very uncomfortable. Essentially, the union stood to gain over $20,000 from the stroke of a pen by making, you know, our remaining 2 years of that contract fair share. And that's over $20,000 a year. So keep mm-hmm. in mind, that's ongoing. What they got out of it was very little. There were a few faculty members who decided to go ahead and just kind of roll with it, you know, go along to get along kind of a thing. But we made it as uncomfortable as we could. We were very outspoken, as much as we could be. And when that 2-year contract came up, the local union members elected not to include fair share as part of the new contract. So it is the only time in the state of Pennsylvania, as far as anyone knows, that fair share fees have actually been dropped from a contract after they've gone in.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me, Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners, and our special guest, Keith Williams from Americans for Fair Treatment. Now, tell us about the organization that you're working with now. What is Americans for Fair Treatment?
Sure. Americans for Fair Treatment has it as our goal to educate, equip, and empower public sector employees to basically give them the freedom to associate freely. A lot of times, you know, especially in this climate, you're hearing mixed messages about unionism. Our goal really is to just make sure that people are making an informed decision and they're getting the full picture.
Well, and because these are, as the Supreme Court of the United States ruled in Janus, that these are core First Amendment fundamental constitutional rights for all Americans: freedom of speech, freedom of conscience, freedom of association. And again, as we said, that just because a ruling was handed down, it doesn't mean that people automatically get those rights. They have to claim those rights.
47%. There was a survey done that found that 47% of public sector employees were not aware of the Janus case. So obviously the first step in all of that is really just to explain to people what the implications of Janus are. And beyond that, then what steps can they take? What options do they have to exercise those rights? And one of the things we found in other states where similar things have occurred, simply because you have this right doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to exercise it. So the education piece is critical.
Well, and I know that overnight, essentially, all the non-union members, the fair share monies, the so-called fair share
the
monies,
coercive
yes,
union
yes,
fee.
The unfair shares that were forcibly taken from paychecks right. like yours, that stopped. But that was only for non-members. So now you may have some union members that, as you gave an example of some of your colleagues who said, well, you know, if I'm going to be forced to pay this, I'll just pay the full amount because then I can have a voting right in the union and I'm not on the outside. I suspect there are lots of people that are current, you know, union members, but only are such because they felt compelled or they thought, well, if I'm going to pay 80%, why not just pay 100% and not, you know, lose the ability to vote? How do they get out? How can they exercise, you know, their Janus rights, as we will know them now, and say, look, I don't want to pay anything to the union. I've been coerced to do this or I felt coerced. How do I get out? What is a teacher or a state worker or a policeman that says, I'm not interested in funding the politics of these unions?
One of the things that I find interesting is that you will hear unions talk about the benefits of membership, and yet they make it incredibly difficult to get out.
So good we got to force you to pay for it.
Exactly. So to me, you know, that's the question I would pose is, look, if it's so great to get in, why do you make it so difficult to get out? And to your point, Matt, as a teacher in Pennsylvania, if I want to get out of a union right now, most districts have what they call a maintenance of membership window where you are limited to about 15 days at the end of the contract. So most contracts for, you know, a school district, say your contract's a four-year contract, you are limited to a 15-day window every 4 years if you want to get out of that.
And if you miss it, you can't get out for, say, the next 4 years.
Yeah.
You will then have deductions out of your paycheck. Is this another opportunity for a lawsuit that there would be challenges to this ability to, you know, coerce or, you know, I guess hold captive anybody that says, hey, I want to exercise my Janus rights. I want to become a non-member and stop paying all these union dues. To me, that seems like an opportunity for further litigation to make sure you fully restore First Amendment rights of public employees.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's certainly an opportunity that's there. And, you know, again, to that point about exercising your freedom of association, you know, nowhere does it say that your freedom of association only occurs once every 4 years. You know,
yeah, during 15 days in August.
When yeah, you're exactly. Not which, and I'm about, sure, yeah. And I'm sure there's lots and lots of advertisement yeah. letting you know that window is about to open.
Right. Yeah.
Well, what was interesting? I know in Michigan that some school districts, or maybe it was the MEA, Michigan Education Association, changed the address to which you were to send your resignation. And of course didn't know. Notify anybody. And if your signed resignation didn't arrive in that window, they denied your ability to resign from the union. So there are plenty of ways, you know, for them
Charming.
To continue their coercive ways.
Well, and of course, my attitude and the attitude of business is that unions should have to earn members the same way that we earn customers, one by one and all over again tomorrow.
Well, so Keith, how are you going to go about that educating and equipping and empowering, I think were the three E's you used, so that public employees can fully exercise their First Amendment rights under the Janus case?
Well, we've got a number of things going on right now. Certainly our websites would be the primary way for people to get in touch with us, AmericansForFairTreatment.org and also FreeToTeach.org is specifically an outreach to public sector teachers. So both of those can talk people through the process. Again, if you have questions, you can reach out to us on both of those websites, reach out to us through email or through the phone numbers there. But, you know, again, that's really what this is about, is just teaching people what their rights are, educating them on what their options are. A lot of people are intimidated by the thought of leaving. There is a go-along-to-get-along mentality. Where people don't want to rock the boat and they just want to try to stay under the radar, even if that means, you know, paying for things that they don't support. So we're here to kind of come alongside them and help them through that process if they're not comfortable.
I know that since the Janus decision and that when you left the classroom this or earlier this year, kind of finishing your, what, 17th year?
18th
year.
Oxford,
okay.
Yeah.
And a track coach cross country, right?
Yep.
That you fielded quite a few of calls and, I guess, emails. Are there any stories that are worth telling or that you can tell, I guess, because sometimes folks that are trying to exercise these rights can be threatened or intimidated by those who don't want them to leave the union.
Yeah, we have actually one phone call in particular right now in a large city. I'll be very vague, but one particular group of teachers who is interested in leaving their union in a group. I feel like it's this underground house church type of mentality in communist China. Like they want to get together to do this, but they're just overcome with fear.
And we'll flicker our lights when it's safe to enter, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. So we're working through the process with them. There are some other public sector employees who are really across the board, AFSCME, SEIU, PSEA, AFT, there's groups of people who have reached out to us interested in decertification efforts, individual union resignation. It's really all across the board. People are really displeased with what their unions have been doing.
Well, and that's and again, we're almost out of time, but you touched on something important. The idea that you can have one union vote, one organizing vote, one event, and then there's never never another election held again. Ever to the point where you can have a workforce full of people, not one of whom ever voted to put that union in place, and that there's never a vote.
Almost sounds like a banana republic.
Yeah, pretty much.
Third world
pretty much.
Country.
Well,
yeah.
But we're going to bring an end to that too. So this is all the time that we have. But this has been so interesting. And Keith, thanks again for. For your leadership, for being the kind of concerned citizen who actually wants to, make a difference.
Absolutely. Yep. And thank you so much for having me on too. Again, any opportunity we can get to talk about it is just another opportunity to teach people about what's going on and what they can do to exercise their freedom of association.
And AmericansForFairTreatment.org, FreeToTeach.org. That's where to go to learn more. Matt, where can people go online to learn more about you and what you're doing?
Yeah, go to TheCommonwealthPartners.com or Facebook.com/CommonwealthPartners and get informed about all these things.
And as ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org and on Sunday mornings at 8:30 on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. So that's all we have for now. Thanks to all of you for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Presidential candidate Donald Trump made construction of a border wall between the United States and Mexico one of the key issues in his 2016 campaign. The wall has become the focal point of a much larger plan for securing the nation's southern border and controlling the flow of illegal immigrants. Congressional Democrats, more concerned about politics than national security, have so far prevented President Trump from getting the funding needed to build the wall and generally frustrated efforts to curb illegal entries into the country. Certainly not known for his patience, President Trump is now threatening to shut down the federal government if funding for the wall is not included in the federal budget, the deadline for approval of which is October 1st. The problem is that it has been decades since Congress actually approved a federal budget. Failing in its foremost constitutional duty, Congress has instead kept spending flowing through a process known as continuing resolutions because it is incapable of arriving at consensus on an actual budget. Like most matters associated with government, how things are supposed to work bears little resemblance to how they actually work. The federal budget process is no exception to that rule. In theory, shortly after the first of the calendar year, the president submits a proposed federal budget to Congress. Congress then develops top-line spending budget numbers, setting a benchmark for spending. Then appropriations committees in the two chambers develop spend numbers for specific expenditures. Those appropriations are expected to go to a conference committee, where the differences between the two chambers are worked out. Congress must then approve the budget, which goes to the president for signature. That process must be completed by October 1st, the start of the federal fiscal year. Depending upon how you define a past budget, it has been at least since 1997 since the regular order of that process played out. Since that time, Congress has authorized spending through a never-ending series of continuing resolutions, a process haphazard at best, irresponsible in practice, and unconstitutional at worst. The prospects for a return to the regular budget process are non-existent for this year, or, given the Democrats' resistance strategy, for the balance of President Trump's administration. And so, during these waning days of summer, with yet another October 1st deadline looming, the budget games are underway. It is clear Congress will now send another continuing resolution rather than an actual budget to the president. The last such omnibus bill was an orgy of spending, which the president reluctantly signed while warning he would not sign another such monstrosity. Democrats have dug in their heels on the border wall and on illegal immigration generally. With the aid of a compliant mainstream news media, they have artfully demagogued the issue for political advantage, with an eye toward regaining control of the U.S. House of Representatives in the upcoming November elections. That, of course, is a very real possibility, and the president knows it. Historically, the party of a newly elected president loses seats in the next midterm election. While the math favors Republican retention of their U.S. Senate majority, control of the lower chamber remains very much in doubt. So President Trump has little to lose by playing the government shutdown card. He knows that a shutdown is not actually a shutdown. Essential government services continue, while actions more designed to affect public opinion, like closing national parks, are what actually occurs. By refusing to sign any continuing resolution that does not include border wall funding, the president would be fulfilling a key campaign promise, place a spotlight on Democrat intransigence over the immigration issue, energize the Republican base for the upcoming elections, and highlight the absurdity of the broken federal budget process. Government by shutdown is certainly not the preferred way to proceed and is ultimately an admission of failure by all involved in the process. Congress bears the primary responsibility for this failure. After all, they are the ones who for decades have not actually passed a federal budget and placed it on a president's desk for signature. That an unorthodox president might utilize congressional dysfunction to accomplish one of his key policy objectives is entirely predictable. How it will play out, legislatively or politically, is impossible to tell, but it is beginning to look like we might find out. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WWBE-FM and WFYY-FM in Selins Grove, along with WISL-AM in Shamokin, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
We'll be right back.